This is Mary Alice Long, Jung and Play, Child Archetype, Playing Toward Wholeness, November 10th, 2010.
I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Mary Alice Long. Mary Alice lives in Langley, so she's a Northwest person. She earned her PhD from Pacifica Graduate Institute. She's going to be talking on play, as you know, and she's director of Play Equals Peace, which is working with adults who need to recover their playfulness and spontaneity. She has three adult children and four grandchildren, and today she spent some time with her 16-month-old twins, her granddaughters. Or sons, or one of each?
One of each.
One of each, all right. Okay, and she also has two dogs. And she recently presented this program in Charlotte, North Carolina, and also in California. And after tonight, she will be going to the World Creativity Forum in Oklahoma City. So let's welcome Mary Alice Long.
Hello, everybody. Hello out there. So I'm Mary Alice Long. Welcome to everybody. And yes, we're going to talk about play tonight. So before I launch in about myself, I'd like to just maybe say a few words about play in the Jungian community that I've noticed. I'm a big noticer. And kind of like to playfully report on what I noticed. So one of the things that I've noticed, and in particular, or in response to my being at the Journey Conference in Charlotte, North Carolina, I was there to present Jung and Play. And everyone there knew that. And so a number of people, I mean, probably half the people there, and there were 70, came up to me, and with very serious faces, like that, you know, very tense bodies, they asked me, "What are you going to do to us? What are we being called to, asked to do? What play are you going to have us do?" Now, I've been asked this question many times over the last 30 years, playing with people, okay? So, but at this point, I really realize that it is difficult for adults in our culture to play. Our society says play does not benefit you. What benefits you is working a lot, being in the trenches, taking achievement tests, GRE tests, towards your grad school, and so forth, and then coming up with a good grade. I'm sure many of you can relate to that. So even if you want to play, say, in school, you're up against all of that. You're up against your teacher saying things to you like, "I am so disappointed in you, Mary Alice. You got a D in my class. You're so much more than that." "Yes, I am, professor." This particular professor was Chauncey Alexander, a senior social worker in my program at Long Beach Cal State, and I admire him so much. He was about to retire, and I took one of his many classes. And basically, I was playing. I was balancing my life because I was a single mom. I was going to school. I was working full time. And I had to let go of something, and I let go of his class. So I didn't get the A that I normally get in classes. So that's an example of what our society does, and our kids and many adults are up against this, and elders who want to play more in their life, find meaning in their life through playful experience. That's my plan. I'm now 57. My plan is to have a playful life the rest of my life and to live my life through my purpose. How about you? Okay. So that's some of what I would like to talk about through talking about Jung, what Jung said about play, how he played, about the child. Now, there's many people, I'm not the first to have looked at the child, but Jung really thought of the child as a key archetype, very important for us to be with our child and to find ways to nurture our child, even if we're 99 years old, okay? And maybe even more importantly, if we're 99 years old. Because I know even as I was coming here and I was with my grand twins, Chase and Jenny, who are 16 months old, as Benny said, I was getting ready. I was trying to get ready, and I had all these things to get together because I had the stuff from the kids, and I had stuff so I could stay over at Bunny's house, and I'm leaving on Sunday, and I'm doing all this, you know, organization. And I was getting dressed, and I came out, and my grand twins both said, "Wow," because I had dressed up. I wasn't in my usual little play outfits with, you know, my jeans and my colorful this and that. And, but my daughter, who was very harried coming home from work and was fixing chicken soup, and grandpa was there, the other grandpa on the other side of the family, he was busy. None of the adults paid any attention to me. And I felt inside just a momentary wounded child, because, you know, I would have liked them to have said, "Wow, Mom, you really dress up," kind of like John here with his suit. "You really kind of clean up well," but I didn't get that. So when I sat in the car, I took a deep breath, I did a little hand dance, and I said, "You know what? I am good enough, and I'm playful, and I love what I do, and I'm going on to do that." And that's not, you know, the important. But years ago, that would have been a much bigger issue for me. Just that one little thing. So again, I'm sure many of you can relate to those kind of stories. So get my glasses out of here. One way that I've learned about play too is that in the Jungian community in particular, is that, you know, I really play full out, and I want to be my unique self, and my mission is to help others be fully their unique self through their natural essence. Okay, so when I'm doing whatever I do to play, whether I'm exploring my dreams, I'm on a hike, I'm dancing, I'm working with clients in my studio or outdoors, whatever I'm doing, I want to be operating from my unique natural essence. Pretty tall order. Okay, so sometimes I do some pretty, what some people might call, very silly, foolish things that make me, that could, you know, people are going to say, "Well, why would she do that? I don't like that. That's very strange." at times, because that's part of who I am. That is my child leaping out. Okay? So, for instance, I might do something like this to show you part of my child. Why? Because that's part of who I am, and that's my child coming out. So you get to all to see it. Now, I'm not asking you to do that. Maybe some of you will. You'll want to join me in that at some point, but that's who I am. And in the Jungian community, what I notice, again, is that oftentimes lectures in particular are very serious. Nobody smiles. And if it's about movement, and I've been at many of the movement embodied type of experiences, or supposedly embodied type of experiences through the Jungian community, and often you sit in your chair the entire time. And I'm the only one, or one of two maybe, who gets up and actually moves around the room and looks at people and notices who's in the room. You know? So that is something that I want to bring out of the closet, I guess, that in in our circles, in our analytical circles, it's okay to be who you are. Years ago, I've been going to Jungian conferences for years and years and years, and my experience was that an analyst would come to talk, and not all the analysts, but a number of them, and I would raise my hand, and I would want to make a contribution. And so they say, okay, so what do you have to say? I'd ask my question, and they would use that opportunity to scapegoat me and tear me down in some way in front of everybody else, and then everybody else would not say anything. And I would leave those one by one with my husband a lot of times, and I'd sob. I would literally be in a restaurant sobbing because somebody wounded my child. Now, these are not things that at most Jungian conferences you'll hear people talking about. But I can tell you that I've had many conversations with people who have been at those same conferences on a more intimate level, and they've also had those kind of experiences. It's very common in groups with a leader or somebody that's put up on a pedestal, certainly Jung is put up on a pedestal and followers, that there's scapegoating that goes on in those groups. It's the tension of the opposites. You know, there's so much joy and depth to what is involved in the Jungian community. On the other hand, there is coyote, raven, and some of that can get kind of nasty at times. So, play really helps to balance that out if we can, you know, really, if we can notice what's happening, declare it, name it, and make it conscious and do something about it as a group. I am so proud to be presenting to my Jungian tribe. So, as John said, my God, you have a lot of Jungian things on your computer. And I do, lots of them, and mostly that in play. So, so everyone take a deep breath, if you would. Just take a deep breath. And close your eyes. And imagine that you are a king or a queen, and you're in your own kingdom. And if you don't close your eyes, just find a soft spot to focus on. So, as this king and queen, what do you imagine your kingdom to look like? You also have a special magic wand. And this magic wand, of course, has fairy dust that you can sprinkle on anything you like. What does it look like, your magic wand? You can make it in anything you want it to look like. And what does it feel like in your hand? So in this kingdom or in this realm, you only allow in the people that you want. You only allow in the animals that you want or any sentient being that you want. This is your kingdom. You're the king or the queen, a very compassionate king or queen, but you are the one who makes the rules, the playful rules. So think about who is in your kingdom that you would like to have stay there with you. The people and animals and other living beings that are very supportive of you. Maybe it's rocks, maybe it's mountains, maybe it's lakes, maybe it's raven. Maybe it's an ancestor from way back, your mom who's passed, a sister, a friend. All these living beings, who of them would you like to stay? Continue to breathe, of course. Don't forget to breathe. And then who would you like to have move on to another realm? Very peacefully, you just ask them to move on and move out of your kingdom. There, they can play in their own way, which does not fit your playfulness. So watch them go, and then imagine this beautiful kingdom of yours and what it looks like just for you, for now and forevermore. You can always go back. Sometimes, at some point, you might want to change things again. Or somebody might slip back in. It's okay to ask them to leave again, but peacefully. So what you're doing is you're taking action. You're deciding and you're taking action on what you want to happen in your kingdom. That's a very playful kingdom where you're king or queen and you are as unique and as essential as you are to be in this world. Okay, so when you're ready, open your eyes. Now I'd like you to just follow along with me, and just so we can move a little bit in our chair, in your chairs. You don't have to get up unless you want to. And I'd just like you to shake out an arm. Shake out another arm. Shake out your leg. Shake out your other leg. Shake out what you're sitting on. And shake out your voice. Okay. And repeat after me a few sounds. Wah, 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 wah. Ka, ka, ka. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ta 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 ta. Thank you. Just open your mouth and shut it. and open your mouth. I'd shut it and make a funny face. Make another funny face. Make another funny face. Okay, thank you. Shake all that out. That feels better to me. Thank you. Okay, so for those of you who don't know me, I'd like to tell you a bit of a story. And what led me to remember the importance of play in my own life and my quest to help parents, grandparents, and couples in particular to recover the playful spirit left behind. When, as child has slipped into our culture's sense of adulthood, we were told in any number of ways, play is only for children. Mary Alice sat reading alone and wistfully looked out the window of her bedroom, dreaming and flying to places far beyond the confines of her sanctuary. She spent as much of her time as possible playing, skipping, riding bikes, being outside, dancing and choreographing plays and dances for the neighborhood, creating puppets and puppet shows and theater, observing animals, making lists of local plants and gently tending and feeding them. When it was time to come inside, Mary Alice would walk up the stairs to her room and settle in for a long read or a daydream. Or she'd travel by foot to a community building called the library. Mary Alice flew out of her window whenever her spirit wanted to soar beyond the earth. Her visits to various realms allowed her to remain playful in her own kingdom, where life was sometimes hard. In fact, her kingdom at that time was largely at war with itself. Mary Alice's imagination, dreams, and playfulness provided her with the support she needed. Dreams are so playful and so helpful to us. Mary Alice listened to her dreams and acted and found herself wanting more out of life at a certain point in her adulthood. Because she never left her playfulness behind, Mary Alice's dreams provided a landscape to travel in and return to as she wandered Earth. Many fellow travelers of Mary Alice's dismissed dreams and told her that dreams are just silly. Why would you pay attention to them? Mary Alice grew in power and authority through her dreams. She began to blend her own unique vision with what she had learned from her teachers about dreams and their importance in creating a playful life filled with meaning. Through her dreams, she married her king. Her children and grandchildren thrived in her kingdom. Each morning, dreams were told and listened to, reflected on. Dreams of Mary Alice's foretold many changes. Through trial and error and risk-taking, and what some called foolishness, a deep ravine was replaced by a playful path of transformation and individuation. So now that you know a little bit about me through that story, I'd like us to pause my own notes here and have you face the person next to you and one person share for just a few, like 30 seconds or a minute, why you're here. And then the other partner can do that. And I'll use a little gong that I brought just to tell you when to switch partners, okay? So I'd like to start by reading, after that, I'd like to start with reading a poem by Goethe And one of the things I know about lectures or speaking is that brevity, levity, and repetition are really good. So a two-hour lecture is really, it's a long time, especially on a Friday night. So that's my goal. So if I get too long-winded or too serious, I'm going to make sure that I come back to play because, you know, that's not the point of doing this, right? For instance, just so I don't get into this serious Jungian self, what do you think, Diane? I'll wear my little hands for you. All right. I wore these on Halloween, by the way. That's pretty cool. Okay, so this is called Goethe. This is the holy longing. Tell a wise person or else keep silent because the mass man will mock it right away. I praise what is truly alive, what longs to be burned to death. And so long as you haven't experienced this, to die and so to grow, you are only a troubled guest on the dark earth. Okay, so I'm going to read it again. The holy longing. Tell a wise person or else keep silent. Because the mass man will mock it right away. I praise what is truly alive, what longs to be burned to death. And so long as you haven't experienced this, to die and so to grow, you are only a troubled guest on the dark earth. Okay. So the mass man being that person I was talking about in a couple of the stories who, when I was being my unique self, said, enough, too much play. We're a serious society here. Stop that. Or you're putting yourself way out on a limb and you're going to really look like a fool. You're going to fall right on your face. Good, I say, because that's how creativity works. What and this line, what longs to be burned to death? How many people in our collective history have been burned at the stake in one way or another for being themselves, aka my standing up very innocently, the innocent child at these Jungian events, and being branded and leaving sobbing? So the other piece of this is that to die, it's about the opposites. To die is to live. Been doing a lot of talking about our small deaths that we all have in our lives. Today, I'm sure you all experience some small death, if not, least of all, not your cells dying one by one. See, we're mostly made up of water and we shift a lot. And we have so many energy fields we don't even know about. So we die in all kinds of ways, close and far out, way beyond the bounds that we know about. And those deaths help us to live up to the point when we do die and we enter another something. We don't know what. We all have our theories on that. Okay. So Let me try this little device John passed me. So Jung and play, playing towards wholeness. Let's see. So, let's see if I can, I guess that's it. Okay. So that's me with my older grandchildren playing in the leaves, autumn leaves. So essential for us to get out and play every day outdoors. That might mean taking a walk in your neighborhood. That might mean doing walking meditation in your garden or walking in the city if you live in the urban area. Or just sitting outside by your wherever you live, spending time talking to a neighbor. Or it might mean some great adventure. But an hour a day, many people, including myself, say is essential to keep a playful balance. And optimally, we play with all generations. And in our dreams, we play with our ancestors and those who have gone before us. And we play with change, and we play with possibility. Okay. So here is an image of the orphan. And the orphan is it's a part of the child archetype. We all carry this feeling inside us, one way or the other, about being abandoned, about being left behind, about, you know, not being wanted. And many of our children actually are orphans. Many, many of them. This particular child is an orphan in Eastern Europe, and that's where so this picture came from. John, would you be able to turn the film clip on? So I'm going to show you a little clip from Anne of Green Gables. Many of you might know that film.
Mrs. Hammond, ma'am. Mrs. Hammond, I sent a reply to your letter just this morning. I'm afraid we cannot take the girl. We're overcrowded as it is.
But I've already had to divide my own sweet babies among my relatives, ma'am. She ain't my responsibility no more. You have to take her.
Come here, child. Tell me what you know about yourself.
Well, it really isn't worth telling, Mrs. Cadbury. But if you let me tell you what I imagine about myself, you'd find it a lot more interesting.
She was 12 last March, ma'am. Born in Halifax. Both parents died of the fever when she was just 3 months. I took her in from a neighbor last year to help out with the young'uns. But she's been in and out of orphanages ever since she was a wee thing, and she's not too proud for here.
And what were your parents' names?
Walter and Bertha Shirley. Aren't they lovely names? I'm proud they had such nice names. It would be such a disgrace to have a father called, well, Hezekiah.
It doesn't matter what a person's name is, as long as they behave themselves.
Well, I don't know. I read in a book once that a rose by any other name would smell as sweet, but I was never able to believe it. A rose just couldn't smell as sweet if it were a thistle or a skunk cabbage.
I don't know where she picks up them fool ideas, but she's a real bright little thing, ain't she? And she won't be no trouble to you, I can promise you that.
So, there's Anne, once again, looking for home. And as the movie and the story goes on, of course, it came from a wonderful book, Anne is a little magpie. She's very chattery. She's very playful. She's very creative. And she's really called to task in this community where she ends up, to see if she's suitable, if she'll be a suitable, well, in this case, it was supposed to be a little boy, and she ends up being a little girl, and there's all these complications. But she wins them over. Her little, but her personality is really just a talkative, nonstop talk. And she ends up becoming very successful, very creative, and finding somebody to love in a deep relationship as a young person. Now, so Anne is an example of an orphan in that little clip we saw. And there's also other different children that we carry. You know, the wounded child, the eternal child, the innocent child. And it's so important for us to get to know all the different parts of our child within. Jung talked about the child as being the beginning and the end. So the beginning, meaning pre-birth, all the way through to after death. So he wasn't talking about, you know, elders are sometimes talked about as, oh, they become like children. He wasn't talking about that. He was talking about after we die, we have a chance to be our essential selves. And that's what we're working towards in individuation. If you're individuating, you're becoming. You're becoming. So this is from the Tao. Return to the beginning, become a child again. And Jung says, and to the end. What can I do? Just click it? Okay. So here, again, here's an opposite. Here is a playful connection. You might have seen that little girl. She's like, no, you know, really angry. And then it jumped to a more innocent looking connection between the kids. So play, of course, has opposites and edges and many layers. And here's a picture that I chose to represent the innocent child. I guess Anne, you know, she's not only an orphan, she's very innocent. She believes in possibilities no matter what. I think I carry that quite a bit, that I want everything to work out. And so I do that really deep work and go into those dark spots and meet those dark figures so I can get to that place. And so before we take a break, I'll just ask this question. Why is it so much work to play? And many, many people have asked me that. Come saddled up to me and said, why do I have to work so hard to play? And I think in the Jungian community, this is so for many people. Even though, you know, we really talk a lot about the imagination, active imagination, playing with your dreams, but it can get pretty darn serious. So in our culture, we have a lot of workaholism. We have a lot. And, you know, if you're in school and you're working and you have families, and I mean, it's just a given. We have a lot of single-parent families. Parents don't know how to play with their children. This has become, I've just wrote an article about this, because I've had so many parents come to me and say, I don't know how to play with my children. I don't know how to play. What's going to happen to me when my children leave home? I don't know how to play. And they get in this kind of a panic when they hear what I do. And it's a real thing, because I've heard it so many times. And now lots of people are writing about this. And I think it's really good. There's groups like Kaboom and the National Institute of Play and the International Association of Play. So they're, and the military and the Department of Defense are behind play as a resource for the military. That says, that's like a huge, huge thing. The military and the Department of Defense are naming play as a way to balance out life and give strength to the mission. I mean, that just doesn't sound like it was, it's real, but it is. It is real. So that's the field we're working in. Nature deficit disorder. I really don't like that term that Richard Louv coined, because it pathologizes the fact that we don't connect as much with nature in our culture now as we used to. We don't go outside as much. Like in one study, 60% of kids in this study would rather do video games than go outside. Preschoolers, 2 to 5, are watching 32 hours of TV, you know, children's TV, but per week, 32 hours, that's a almost full-time job, okay? They're watching, those same kids are watching, or, you know, some big percentage, like maybe 40%, they're watching TV, these shows, from 8 to 11 p.m. So right now, while we're sitting here, and I'm standing here, they're watching TV. That's outrageous. And that's the field of dreams that we live in, that we need to change. We do value in our culture the arts. We want to eliminate recess. We want to eliminate vacations. We cut the kids' lunchtime in schools. This is happening across the country, and it's moving into other countries too, because we, you know, we tend to do that. So these are examples of why we need to work towards play, and that why I do the work I do in play. Before we take a break, I'd like to pass out, or have Baby John help me pass out, some index cards. If you don't have a pencil or pen, we have some. And I would like you to write on the card one way that you played as a child, that you remember, that you really liked to play. And then I'd like you to just write a little short story about it, not very long, just something about it, and write it legibly, please, so it can be read later, or printed. That would be great. So we'll pass those out. And then we can take a break when you're done. If you could just put them maybe up here on the podium, that would be great. Okay, I guess John's not big. I'm going to read a couple of the cards, just at random, if I can. I like to play outside in the woods or at a, oh gosh, I can't read that, maybe. But anyway, near our home. Playing war was also a lot of fun with my friends. Vietnam was occurring during my youth. We also did a lot of fishing. Drawing and writing stories was fun also. I also like conducting at-home science experiments with household items. So that must have been an experience. I also liked playing with fire and riding my bike long distances. Whoa. Mostly to candy stores and other stores to buy stuff. But the adventure of getting there was what it was all about. And I would say that last part, it's still what it's all about, getting there, the adventure of getting there, right? Okay, let's just try one more here. ball games outdoors. Used to spend most of our time outside as children. Rain or shine, didn't have many toys, so we had to use fallen branches, rocks, flowers, etc. So that's really cool. Okay. I'm going to start with a question. What is the world's biggest secret? Play is flow that leads to creativity. Okay, so if you want to be creative, then play is the way. So, John, would you play that film clip? I'm going to have John start another film clip, and this is from The Visitor.
Tarek?
Oh. Hi.
Sounded good, Walter.
I'm sorry, Ed.
No, don't be sorry. That's what it's there for. I was lying on my bed listening to my music, and then I was like, what's that crazy rhythm I'm hearing? Sit. Come on. I'll show you. Just put your feet flat on the ground. Now take the drum between your legs like this. Now you want to take the inside edge off the ground with your ankles like this. Great. Feel okay?
Okay.
Okay. Now, Walter, I know you're a very smart man, but with a drum, you have to remember not to think. Thinking just screws it up, okay?
Okay.
Now, give it a couple of bangs. Not so hard. You're not angry at it.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Better. Did you think?
No.
Good. Now, one more thing, Walter. You listen to classical music, so you think in fours. One, two, three, four. Da, 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 da. This is an African drum, so we're going to be playing in threes. Tak, tak, tak. You have to forget your classical. Leave it behind. Tak, tak, tak. One, two, three. Come on, follow me. Start again. Good. Don't worry. Again. Good. You got it. Go on.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry. Go again. That's it. Now keep me going and I'll do this. There you go. Thank you.
So Walter is a man who is a college professor. And he has his little name tag because he was at a conference and he was pretending that he was the keynote speaker when in fact he was not, trying to make his life more than what it really was. Or so he thought. And so Walter, at the beginning of the film, you see him trying to take piano lessons at home. And he's trying to be really perfect about how he plays the piano with his teacher. And he can tell that, no, this is not the way. So he sends the teacher on her way. You know, he says, no, this isn't it. Later, he arrives for this conference at an apartment and in New York, and he finds these visitors, one of whom is a drummer, an illegal citizen here, and a drummer. And he finds himself playing the drums and loving it and actually playing out in public and working through his foolish feelings that he isn't doing it right, which, again, I'm sure you can all relate to. When I was in, Central California doing some play work and doing a presentation of Jung and Play, I had the pleasure of taking a morning walk every day with my friend, long-term friend, and we would feed the birds. And the birds were mockingbirds and jays, some of my favorite birds. Very loud, very boisterous. In fact, a lot of people will say to me about these birds, oh, they're so noisy. I don't like those birds. In fact, I shoot them with my BB gun. And I love them because they are so intelligent, so playful. Research has recently been done here with crows to show that they are playful. And the way they learn about unexpected events is, they take those unexpected events into their brains, is through play. Wolves, ravens, there's a lot of information out about how animals play and how that helps them. And so do we. And it helps us too. So I found a beautiful poem by one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver, called Mockingbirds. This morning, two mockingbirds in the green field were spinning and tossing the white ribbons of their songs into the air. I had nothing better to do than listen. I mean this seriously. In Greece, a long time ago, an old couple opened their door to two strangers who were, it soon appeared, not men at all, but gods. It is my favorite story how the old couple had almost nothing to give but their willingness to be attentive. But for this alone, the gods loved them and blessed them when they rose out of their mortal bodies like a million particles of water from a fountain. The light swept into all the corners of the cottage, and the old couple, shaken with understanding, bowed down. But still, they asked for nothing but the difficult life which they had already. And the gods smiled as they vanished, clapping their great wings. wherever it was I was supposed to be this morning, whatever it was I said I would be doing, I was standing at the edge of the field. I was hurrying through my own soul, opening its dark doors. I was leaning out. I was listening. And the reason I chose this poem is because play, there's so much about being attentive, about being observant, about really being able to listen, that we really get when we play, and when we let down our guard, and when we take risks, when we open up our hearts, when we truly are who we are, don't hold back. I recently listened to a 20-minute video by a senior social worker. She's in California. I forget which school. But I was a little hesitant because I was busy. I was thinking, 20 minutes. But the people who recommended this on Facebook, this video, I really honor them. So I listened to this and watched this woman speak. And what she talked about is vulnerability. And it was so, I just knew, the reason that it was dropped in my lap was because I was going to come here and talk today. Because play is all about being vulnerable. If you're not vulnerable, you can't play. Okay? Because surely somebody's going to say, oh my God, what are you doing? That's just too much. That's the price you pay when you play as an adult. Okay. Let's see what I can do here. We'll just click. So to play, in essence, in our culture, we need clearance, okay? We need our own clearance to play. We don't need, just like in every bit of our work towards individuation, go to the source. What's the source? Our dreams. We have everything we need. We're given our dreams. They're gifts, and they lead us to play. They're playful, and they lead us to play. Dr. Jung, in every child, an eternal child, something that is always becoming is never completed and calls for unceasing care, attention, and education. That is the part of the human personality which wants to develop and become whole. That is the part of the human personality which wants to develop and become whole. The child. I found this bit about ancient Egypt, which I found very profound. After death, Egyptians were confronted by Osiris with a quiz that had to be answered honestly. After 42 routine questions concerning how the deceased had lived, Osiris asked the crucial question, did you find joy or play? And did you bring joy to others? That's it. That's the big one. And if you look at any of the people that have come back from death experiences, that's often what they report. They have those kind of questions. What did you do for yourself? Did you honor who you are? And did you give to others love? It really all goes back to love. Okay. This is again Dr. Jung. The dynamic principle of fantasy is play. A characteristic also of the child and as such, it appears inconsistent with the principle of serious work. So if you're doing serious work, you're not going to be playing, right? And what it, you know, in the film, what did the drummer say to Walter? Don't think. Are you thinking, Walter? He said, no, I'm not. One of the things we do in improv is we take our hands like this. Everybody do this. Just kind of take your hand up here. And we go, we throw off all this stuff we have. We have so much in our heads. I mean, my electricity is always going, right? And if you play, you get to channel that. You don't have to keep it all inside of you. Because we have so much stuffed into us. So much. Way too much. I don't think I'll do that because of the time. What time is it here? So Dr. Jung noted that a third of his patients were suffering not from neuroses, but rather from emptiness of their lives. So imagine emptiness. And what fills up that emptiness? Now, we just had this summer the Way of the Dream series. And in that series of films, there's interviews of Marie-Louise von Franz. She said, people get absolutely intolerable when they have a creative idea in their womb, that's both men and women, and can't bring it out. So one has to help them bring the child out. And you can help yourself do that. You don't have to have somebody else help you. You can. I happen to love, you know, analysis, and that's a good fit for me, but you don't have to do that. You can do it yourself. Animal play. Once again, there's a book that came out in 2009 called Play by Dr. Stuart Brown. He and others are doing phenomenal research on animal play. And they're also now doing brain scans of people playing. And it shows tremendous change in our entire system when we play. That for the good, of course. So it is the child that sees the primordial secret in nature. And it is the child of ourselves we return to. The child within us is simple and daring enough to live the secret. There's recently been a book out about the secret, and Oprah really promoted that, but this is a different kind of secret. I like to, we won't have a lot of time to get into this, but I'd just like to introduce this story about La Llorona. La Llorona is the crying woman. How many of you have heard of the crying woman? Okay, a few of you, yeah. So Joan Baez has a beautiful version of the crying woman song. But there's many songs, there's a film, there's at least, you know, there's one beautiful film that I've seen, but there's others. And there's many, many, many versions of the crying woman story. She is seen in all the New Mexico, Mexico, Spain, all those areas, and she's often seen as a horse's head, you know, with a horse's head on her, often seen that way, and screaming is another way. So again, La Llorona, this story speaks about playing creativity, but through death, okay, because again, Jungian psychology is so tied into dealing with multiplicity, being comfortable with things that move in the night, you know, being comfortable with opposites, things that shouldn't go together. So my husband said, my God, Mary Alice, what are you going to do? You're going to talk about death? You're going to scare them? I said, oh, no, these are Jungians. You know. So this woman in the story, Lerona, she, in this version, she's about to marry this rich Hidalgo, a king. But he has, and he has this factory that pollutes the river. So that could be the Rio Grande, for instance. So he pollutes the river, but he makes lots of money. He works very hard. He's a workaholic because he wants money, and he doesn't care what it does to anybody else. Well, Lerona becomes pregnant by him, by this Hidalgo, and while she's pregnant, she drinks the water from the river. So you can imagine what happens. The babies are poisoned. And they die. And in her grief, she dies too. And she goes to heaven, and she's told, that's all, that's great, we'll take you into heaven, but you have to go back and find your babies, because they've been lost. So people in these areas, there's other versions of the story, but people in these areas, they see her by the river side, by the banks. They hear her, and there's just all kinds of stories on the internet about her. Well, what is interesting about Lerona, I just love the story and relate to it so much about the polluting of a river and what that, you know, what that would do to its flow and what that does to the life in that river. Similar to what we do to ourselves when we work all the time, when we don't play, when we don't deepen our relationships by spending time with our children, our grandchildren, our friends, our inner circle, when we don't meet people where they are. There's just so many versions of that. And again, I'll repeat, play, the flow of play, leads to creativity. Chaos and messiness and being all over the place, you know, if I were to do another one of those silly dances that I do, or make faces and be messy, or, you know, get in the mud, which I love to do. I love to stomp in the mud, get out there with my boots, you know, forget this. Ew, I'm going to walk around this. Nope, just stomp right through it. That's that kind of play, metaphorically, if not realistically, leads to creativity. It's the only way. We have to be messy. We have to step into the chaos. Our dreams call us to do that. We're called into the darkness. We're called into the unconscious and the collective, where there's a lot of scary beings. So to end, just since we don't have, I don't know how much time we have left. Let's see. Okay. I'd like to read a poem to kind of tie the story and what I just said about Lerona together for you, and we can play some more with the story tomorrow if you're coming to the play shop. But if not, I would love for you to check her out in, definitely on the internet, you can get to her stories and in the library. In Women Who Run with the Wolves, there's a version too. There's a couple versions. This poem is a Rumi poem, who I love also, Rumi. And it's called Bird Wings. Your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hands open and close, and open and close. If it were always a fist or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small contracting and expanding. The two as beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. So imagine yourself flying. And imagine yourself in those moments in your life when you've had those many deaths, or deaths of loved ones, or deep grief, and then you come out on the other side after entering into that grief in a deep way, and you're transformed. About 2.5 years ago, my mom died, and I was privileged to be with her when she died and heard her dreams before she died. She told me her dreams, and I was the one she chose. Dreams of being levitated by the angels. Dreams of going on a trip. And I knew what trip she was going on. She was visiting with loved ones on the other side. And because of that experience, I know today why I'm standing here. It's because of those kind of moments. Really led me to talk to you today about ways you can playfully enhance your life. If you look around in different area in our area here, you'll find different scenes like this, very playful. Here's a bike rack. No, not your standard bike rack. But if you're not playfully aware and you're not in a playful attitude, what happens? You miss it, don't you? You just go on your merry way and your tunnel vision. Okay, so harbor rules. You can see why I might have saw this sign. I really noticed this. No fishing, no swimming, no skating, no biking, no animals, no nothing. Isn't that what our society tells us? No, 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 no. Our kids, you know, kids certainly learn no right away, and it just keeps going. How about yes? Yes! Yes to life. And sometimes it's okay to go against those rules. Often it is. It won't kill you. Is it foolish to be so exposed? What do you think? Here you're all sitting in your chairs. What's the number one fear in America? Speaking in front of a group, right? certainly doing, you know, the things that I do. So there's a lot of different points where you could appear foolish. So what? It'll enhance your life. Move into that just a wee bit, you know. I really encourage you. Plus, the fool, there's many sides to the fool. I even had thought about maybe talking some more about the fool rather than the child, because the fool is so interesting. But one part of the fool is that he's the wisdom of the king, right? So, play opens doors. It really does. And nature play and being outside is so important. This is an image of a child's hand from one of our ancient caves.
Shiva. Okay, I'm trying to get to the slide I want. Here's a child, the divine child dancing on a lotus. Okay, so the question is really tonight for you to take home and to bring to your dreams, because you know bringing intention into your dreams is so important. So what does your child want? And it'll take a while for you to get that answer and to incorporate it. It's not like, oh, I get the answer and that's it. But it's well worth your time. It is the key to individuation. I'm sure many of you have seen this quote or heard it. Matthew, verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. And, does it take a lifetime to achieve? Yes. Maybe even beyond a lifetime. So, one of the things that I have struggled with a bit in my professional life is, and I've come to a resolution actually, I've come to resolution about what the heck I do. What do I do? I am a play consultant and an advocate for play, and I'm a Jungian therapist. But when I talk about my work, I say I'm a play advocate, and I believe that dreams are play. And they really are on the top of the list. For one thing, dreams bring us so much humor, puns, playful metaphor. It's just incredible, the richness of our dreams. I can't imagine going through a day without not paying attention to my imagination, my dreams, my daydreams. I really think that dreams are, we're living a dream right now. And many other people do too. So we're being called to act in our dreams. We're not just being called to write them down. Hopefully you do that. We are being called to do something with what we have, what we're given. It's not a stagnant thing, okay? So in this way, I'd like you to consider when you have dreams that you're making a decision to pay attention to your dreams, and then from your dreams, there's some decisions to be made in your life. That's why you're getting the dreams. What intention did you go to sleep with? What do you ask? What would you like to move into? It may not be what you get. Probably won't be. Matter of fact, because we think we know. That's the other thing that play is about. We think we know it all. You came here tonight and you probably thought, well, I know what it's all going to be like, and I know where I'm going to sit or how I'm going to sit, and I know that, this is how I usually go to lectures, and I'm going to write notes, I'm not going to write notes, I'm going to fall asleep or whatever. You got it all figured out. Shirley's writing notes. And, we all do that. We're humans. We all do that. But there is so much more if you take that I know and you put it aside. And that's play helps us go into the unexpected, like crows who take that in, those wonderful crows. So, and then you can act on your own behalf, not because somebody supposed you, your parents told you that you should do it this way or that way, or your friends. Like my husband saying, how can you talk about death and play? You're going to scare them. If I had listened to him, I wouldn't be, talking the way I'm talking. Because I have to do it my own way, on my own behalf. If I had listened to my parents, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I would be, I'd probably be a nun. That's probably what I'd be. In a Roman Catholic something or other, because they're very conservative Catholic. And in fact, when I have friends who are women ministers, and my mom was horrified. How can you go with that person? You know, so these kind of messages, how can you do that? Okay. So, playful steps. My granddaughter, my 16-month-old granddaughter, said it today. She's learning words, and she said, "Be wild." And I said, "That's what I'm going to talk about tonight. How exciting." Be wild. Begin. Take one way that you played as a child, or maybe the one that you were given from somebody else, and try it out. Either in a big way, a small way, an in-between way. Jung, you know, he talked about going back to your story, going back to how you played as a child. He certainly did. He built his tower. He loved to play in the dirt with water and build. And as he got older, that really manifested in a very big way. So, you know, and also Jung, I mean, he was incredible because, of course, at a very young age, he had this enormous dream that I couldn't imagine that many people had that kind of experience. So he's certainly a remarkable man of our times. And he's also very, very playful. Especially in his elder years, and in his writing, and in the way he talked about dreams and active imagination. And those people that have followed him, including myself. Craft your playful life. What do you want it to be like? Like, I'm doing a 2011 calendar. What am I going to do? Well, part of that is play. Don't let time just slip by and not... Find your own ways to play. I write. I dance. I work with people with their dreams. Sand play. I hike. I'm outside with people. I play with my grandkids. These are all my ways. Everybody here has different ways to play. And we'll be playing with that tomorrow. And lay out nourishment for your playful life and for your child. Literally, you can give an offering to your child. Literally, you can give playful offerings to your ancestors and ask them to help you. And they will. And it'll come in your dreams. There's just so many ways in. That's it. So, I hope that you'll all go your merry way playfully and find your own unique path in play and offer that to somebody else in your life. You know, offer yourself as a play companion to somebody else, whether that's a partner or your children, grandchildren, or a friend, because there's just so much. And also, in the natural world, a lot of us, like myself, relate to animals. So animals and rocks and mountains, and, you know, so find time for yourself in those environments. It's so important when you look at play to find still points, to find moments to stop. Play is not just about energetics. It's about both. It's about stopping and then renewing. Because in the stopping is where we really find ourselves, in those still points. And that can just mean take a deep breath. So everybody take a deep breath with me. And thank you very much. And I'll open to questions as we end tonight.
And that is the end of the recording. This recording was made on DVD, and it included some images. The DVD is available in the library at the C.G. Jung Society, Seattle. The copyright is C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.